What is the biggest entrepreneurial lie you've been told?
There's so many.
Tiffany Knighton.
It's silly to talk about entrepreneurship or to like glamorize it and make it look like it's super sexy, where it can be so fun, but we can't dismiss the mental health struggles that entrepreneurs can face. Yeah. Because there's so many highs and lows. You just have like all this time, like you're your own boss and you can just take off whenever and do anything, where the joke is like you work so much more.
What are the steps have you put into your life to ensure that your time and your freedom's protected?
The boundaries was the biggest lesson for me as an entrepreneur, like hands down. I honestly was trauma hopping from job to job. I was always kind of quitting one bad boss to another.
How did you learn how to be a better boss?
I would kind of see what those relationships are supposed to look like and say, that's how it should be. Yeah. And that's what I want to be. I had an incredible mentor who gave me a really great tidbit. As an entrepreneur, you don't need to worry about making money. You don't have to stress about making money. We do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what you really need to focus on is...
There are some personality traits that we're born with. Maybe you were a fussy infant, a demanding toddler, or an angry teenager. Other parts of our personality actually come from our upbringing, and more importantly, how we choose to respond to it. Tiffany Knighton grew up as an only child in a military family, which means she was packing her bags and saying goodbye to friends every couple of years. Her parents separated when she was young, so she was switching coasts and being exposed to completely different styles of parenting on top of it. And today, she's a successful entrepreneur, a podcast host, and a true force of nature. She's here to share how this unique upbringing helped her find balance early on, and how she worked through the corporate experience and realized it wasn't for her. She talks about what it took to learn and unlearn the skills she would need for entrepreneurial life. Tiffany.
Ginny.
I have noticed that you really step outside your comfort zone. How did you get such courage?
Well, I was definitely thrown into a lot of situations at a young age by being a bi-coastal military child in a military family, where we were moving around not only from different bases, but between my two parents who separated when I was very young. So I constantly had to just jump in a new room, a new classroom, a new group of friends, and just figure it out. And I think that says a lot about how I'm able to just kind of force my way into scenarios now and just try to make the best of it.
How did you make friends? How did you learn how to connect with people?
I honestly would just kind of listen and observe. I would always be a fly on the wall. I was good at keeping myself busy because I'm actually also an only child. We're not as bad as people say. We're definitely not. And especially with the military kid background. I just want to say I am socialized. I do like to share. And that's actually another thing that I was always really open to, is figuring out that you can make connections if you are a little bit more open to sharing your world with other people. And so I kind of figured out that that was how you bring people in. And I think that that kind of translates to how I approach things now, where I don't feel super stingy. I don't really gatekeep. If you're part of my circle, you're really part of my crew, and I'm going to share all my resources with you regardless.
It's amazing that you are so grounded and aware given your background, right? Because there is this stereotype that only children aren't really aware of other people other than themselves, because they're the focal point of their parents.
I understand where the stereotypes come from. I think things were a little bit different for me because I just kind of always felt a sense of I could be comfortable with myself. I came in the world just me, and in my family just me. And I had a lot of, you know, cousins and things like that and friends. But a lot of times when I'd be kind of to myself in my solitude, I could vibe. I'm also a Capricorn, so that kind of helps. There's a lot of underlying things about that factor in. But being able to be comfortable with myself, I notice, has made a huge difference in being able to be around other people and open up to other people and not really feel too in my head about it.
Circling back to your military upbringing, how do you think that lifestyle in particular factored into your sense of community?
Some people say it's a bubble. Everyone does kind of take care of each other, and people definitely follow like regiments and rules, and it's very much a society where you're kind of making sure that you're leaving things in a good place for the next person and for yourself. So maybe that mentality has kind of trickled into how I see community. And another part of it is being a only child and having, you know, single parents where they wanted community. I really give a lot to my parents for thinking about who they put in their circles so that I have good influences. I never really felt like I was lacking much in that department because they were very intentional. And I think I've just emulated that.
Was it a different experience of both your parents, your dad being from the military community and your mom obviously wasn't, but like, how was it different?
Oh, Jenny, it was night and day.
Wow.
The best memories to think about is my teenage years. Those years were really formative because I grew up mostly with my dad for a lot of years in my preteens. He's a very strict guy. He's a military man, 24 years in the Air Force. A lot of great things I've learned from him because of the structure that it provided me, of course. But then, you know, I would go out and hang out with my family on the West Coast with my mom. And it was literally like the laid back lifestyle. That was the total opposite of what was going on the East Coast. So I would wild out a little bit. I kind of like would let my hair down and have fun and explore. But then I still would come back and have the structure. So two totally different worlds.
From an entrepreneurial standpoint, too, like the way you grew up must have really prepared you for knowing how to strike that balance. It's kind of like that Paulo Coelho quote, right? Discipline and freedom are not mutually exclusive, but mutually dependent, because without discipline, we would sink into chaos.
Yeah, like you can't be too overly uptight. I think structure is so important. Again, like I'm an earth sign. I'm a very like grounded person. I love my home. I love things being the way that I left them and how I like them. But too much of that is so bad for me. And I kind of can feel when I'm in too much of a structured world. I think that has a lot to do with the reason why I left corporate. I was told in one position that I left that, you know, you were too creative for this role anyway, that I kind of had more of an entrepreneurial spirit. But at the time, I had no dreams of being an entrepreneur. So I was kind of hurt by that. Like, what do you mean? And I felt that I was very like structured and had this upbringing, and I was an overachiever my whole life. And I was always like going for the awards and doing all the clubs. So things like that, I just didn't take feedback that great at the time. Yeah. But looking back, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, because I had no creative freedom. I have such a creative, fun side, and you can't be creative and fun and have good ideas if you're just too stuffed up, never taking time off, never going outside and touching grass. So I had to change my lifestyle real quick.
I think some people think creativity just shows up when you want it to, but you actually have to allow and create the space for it. Sarah Blakely said that she puts drive time in her calendar because that's where she gets her creative downloads. So it's structuring is important. Making time for creativity is important because you need to allow it to arrive.
Things, you know, that I schedule throughout my day include movement, intentional movement. I try to check off certain habits so that they really become habits. So movement's part of that. Another thing that's part of that, just like how the drives are scheduled in, I love that. For me, it definitely has to be like artist dates. Have you read The Artist's Way?
I have, by Julia Cameron. The morning pages.
The morning pages. Yeah. I'm really bad at my morning pages. I'm like an evening pages girly.
I have to
like dump out like everything in my head and then go to sleep. Right. But like, yeah, artist dates. I'll be like, you know what? I'm going to go to the record store and thrift and have a tea and just sit outside. That's my afternoon and I'm sticking to it. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes I try to override that and say, well, I have things to do. But that's why it has to be planned into the week so that you don't just totally pass it up.
I want to zoom into what you just shared about having to override the thoughts that come into your head, because I totally feel you as an entrepreneur. I also plan everything. But I'm wondering for you, I know the voices that come into my head, what voices have you had to override? Because giving yourself permission to take a break is exhausting in itself, right?
God, it's crazy. There's so many things that come into my head. And a lot of it is, well, that's the thing about fear and negativity, right? A lot of it's kind of things that I might have made up. It's just taking up space in my brain. So I'm kind of stressed. And so I literally have to tell myself, it's not an emergency. When I was in school, I had a professor who would always say, it's PR, not ER. That pops into my head sometimes where I'm like, I'm not saving lives. I love what I do. I think I do amazing work, but it's not surgery. And I did that last week. I had a Pilates class that I scheduled at 9 a.m., which was just something I never do. And it was taking a lot for me to just like relax and take the class. I just kept thinking like people are emailing me. And I took the class, felt amazing, did a long walk home, cleared my head, and it was just the best way to start my day. And it's just like what all these, everything that you read where people are saying, start your day with something like that. They're right. Everyone's right. So just, it's fine. And I came back and like nothing was on fire.
Learning to rely on your team and delegating to make sure you have time for self-care and to wind down, we can both agree those two things are super important, right? And I think that principle of allowing yourself space can be a reflection of how you start your day. So how do you start your day?
I typically will wake up in that first hour, just try to like move. I'll like kind of do things around my apartment, get my outfits ready or whatever I need to do. But my favorite thing is just for at least 20 minutes, hopefully 30, if I'm not, you know, if I'm really just trying to relax. I love to just like lay on my mat, just like stretch. I'll play some of that like meditation music, or I might do like a mat workout, just a short one, just something to get me moving. And that's actually usually when I might do some morning pages.
What is the biggest entrepreneurial lie you've been told?
There's so many. I think the immediate one is that you just have like all this time, like you're your own boss and you can just take off whenever and do anything, where the joke is like you work so much more.
Like, it really, it's true.
But
you love it
working
more, so you don't feel it that way.
Exactly. It doesn't feel that way. Like, yes, I'm always working, but I think that's probably the biggest thing. And that's where you really have to then rein in your own boundaries, have rules for yourself, because no one is telling you what to do, that you're off, whatever. Like, you could have that balance, but you have to just be super intentional about it. It's silly to talk about entrepreneurship or to like glamorize it and make it look like it's super sexy, where it can be so fun, but we can't dismiss the mental health struggles that entrepreneurs can face, because there's so many highs and lows.
The glamorized part of entrepreneurship, yes. There is a sense of freedom and there is a sense of achievement and accomplishment in that, which is a very inspiring feeling to have every day, especially living in New York, right? You're in the city of dreams, living your dream. But the other part of it is the work, the discipline. How have you found setting boundaries around your time and around your emotional energy?
Boundaries was the biggest lesson for me as an entrepreneur, like hands down, especially coming out of corporate life and being like anti-hustle culture, being anti-everything and saying like, I'm burning it down, I'm starting it over, I'm doing it my way.
Right.
But then realizing that you are still working with other corporate entities.
Yeah.
For example, like I have boundaries around how I interact with partners and clients, where I say straight up in my onboarding and in my contracts that I don't communicate past a certain hour in the day. If you need me, I'm available during these hours to chat. We have designated times where we talk. We have a Slack channel set up where you can drop things. We're not going to be sending Facebook DMs about work stuff. We're not doing that.
Love that you said that. Facebook DMs for me, it crosses over to the personal.
It does.
I want to hear from my aunt, not my clients.
And you can't escape it. I think we already live in a world where like everything is so immediately in your face and on your phone. And I used to like disable my Gmail notifications on the weekends. I would forget to turn it back on them. I stopped for that. I got to figure that one out. So there's certain things that you have to figure out. You really have to like intentionally find that separation and communicate it. But one thing I've noticed is once you start doing that, you can really attract more people in business that have those same values.
What are the tips and hacks, or what are the steps have you put into your life to ensure that your time and your freedom's protected?
I was so proud of myself because, again, last night I like really sat with my calendar and I noticed that that's the cause of a lot of my anxieties, because I'm not doing things like this far enough in advance. But essentially, you know, I have my meetings on Tuesdays and Thursdays mostly. My business is really based around networking. And as a business owner, you know, it's so important. So I have networking goals for myself. And one of those networking goals includes, you know, having virtual coffee calls with people that I want to chat with if I can't meet with them in person. So I have kind of like a socializing type day on one day of the week or 2 days of the week, just depending on what the week's like. Another one is creative days.
Love it.
Gotta have the creative
days. Gotta have that. And do you have artist dates on those days?
Yes, okay. I do. Okay. Wednesdays.
That's amazing.
It's Wednesdays for me. I feel like it takes a lot of the pressure off because I kind of wake up excited. the intention is to not really be doing a lot of research heavy, like too deep in the weeds type things. I'm going to like disconnect a little bit, make sure that things are set up so I can kind of step away and focus on generating new ideas. And that's something that I learned from the house program. I had an incredible mentor who gave me a really great tidbit that as an entrepreneur, you don't need to worry about making money. You don't have to stress about making money. We do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what you really need to focus on is generating ideas. And the more you can generate ideas, the more you can have that creative freedom and be in a place where you're constantly coming up with ideas, you will always be able to make money. It changed my mindset about things like that. It's not just like a, hey, you should have some creative freedom. It's a necessity. It's like a non-negotiable. Go touch grass because like you're going to really be in a bad place if you don't.
I want to kind of go back to your time at House, which was in Toronto. Your BFF and your biz partner, Kirsten. How do you maintain a thriving friendship and a thriving business relationship with Kirsten?
One thing that makes it really nice is we, in our relationship, try to maintain a boundary as well. We have designated times where we're talking about projects and work. Yes, we're constantly talking because we are best friends and like we send voice notes like all throughout the day, but we're both really intentional about not just running into it maybe on like a Saturday night or sometime when we know that we're trying to unwind and relax. We try to keep it to reasonable hours and anything else can go on a Slack, go on an email and be read later. We'll even tell each other in emails. We're so cute. We'll be like, don't open this until Monday. But
it sounds like you do have amazing extroverted tendencies. But have you found that since being an entrepreneur, you've gone a little bit more the other way?
I love being to myself and I have to recharge my social battery. That's another reason why I've structured like my weeks the way I did, because I'll be running around and by the time I sit down with you for an interview, I'm really drained from just so much exposure to all the things that I'm trying to fit in. I had a networking quota for the month and I was going to do something this morning, but I really needed to rest. That's the type of energy that I'm really trying to like allow myself into, where it's like, sure, I can still try to be my best and I know how important these things are. I'll hit it again next week. I'll figure something else out.
I think when you're managing a team, when you're managing clients, it's a lot of energy out. So filling your cup energy in requires a lot. And then you become sensitive to, okay, it's energy out, but is it costing me more energy than what I'm getting back? And you think about emotional tax. What are you paying that's not showing up in your P&L statements? What relationships are costing you?
When did you notice that? When did you notice the switch?
I noticed it when I moved to America, when I was so focused on building my business and I went and caught up with someone. I'm like, oh, that's, I'm done. I'm good for the week. I'm bye. Like I'll go there. And then there's times where like last year I had two of my best friends visit me and it was like back to back. And I'm like, whoa, like that was a lot of energy. I'm full. I wasn't drained, but I needed to not talk to anybody.
Absolutely.
For like 2 weeks, you know?
Oh, I can relate to that so bad. Yeah, but like you said, it's a lot of energy out and then you got to fill your cup. 100%. And I'm just not in a place where I'm on go-go socially as much. Yeah. I got to pick and choose.
When you were working with corporate and you were told that you were too creative for the job, you said, how did you feel working corporate? Did you feel like this was it for you?
Yeah, you know, I really thought I was going to climb the corporate ladder. I really did. And I think that's just because what I knew, it was the plan. I went to college. I did all the internships, did all the programs and things. I remember when I got my first job out of school, I was working at Viacom, had gotten full-time role before I graduated. So I was like, I'm checking the boxes. I'm doing the things. I did what I was supposed to do. And then just a month into my new lease that I got, my new role after graduation, layoffs. So that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Ooh, not a great first impression of corporate America.
I just didn't know about some of like the red tape and things that happen kind of behind the scenes in corporations. Like I was just very oblivious to it all. I kind of just dealt with different personalities, definitely discrimination. And definitely trying to like really strive and knowing that like, no, I'm so capable. I'm going to do anything it takes. but also kind of realizing that it's not totally about your expertise and your capabilities, but there's so many other factors that I was just too young to like really see. So by the time I'm kind of worn out by corporate life, I mean, I just kind of started to realize that also I had this passion. It was like in 2020, while, you know, there's all this unrest after George Floyd's murder, and there's so much attention to Black-owned businesses and supporting the Black community. I got together with a group of my friends, and a lot of us were new entrepreneurs, and we wanted to figure out a way to support businesses. So we started this initiative called Sold Out Saturday, where we would work with different businesses in the community, a lot of them based in Brooklyn or in the East Coast, and we would help them build up their business. And then we built a community so that we would market their business to them. And every Saturday, we would try to drive them to sell out of their inventory. So that was really exciting because it was different from the corporate world I was in. I was kind of doing something communal. I was doing something, again, creative. We were coming up with marketing campaigns for them. And PR and communications is naturally creative, but there's so much red tape at these companies. There's so many protocols that you have to get around sometimes. So just to be able to be scrappy in the situation, I was loving it. And then I realized that I just wanted to work with entrepreneurs who were trying to build their businesses. There was a need. They needed the support. So that's where I said, you know, I want to jump ship. I want to focus on something I really believe in. I kind of felt like it gave me life again.
So let's look at that lineup here. You lost your first job out of college. You experienced discrimination. And then George Floyd happened. You seem to take that difficult trifecta and turn it into something that would serve you and your community better, which is a beautiful entrepreneurial start to your story. Can you tell me how these experiences fueled your journey to get where you are today?
I did a lot of reflecting, and I wanted to come up with the ideas, and I wanted to do different things because I wanted to stand out. I wanted to get a promotion. But that was very sometimes threatening in organizations where everybody just, it's like, lay low. Everyone's just going to do their job and go home. Don't be extra. We're not going to like rock the boat. Just do what you're told to do and relax.
And the fly under the radar culture.
Fly under the radar. Right. Fly under. And that was really hard for me because I get bored.
I don't want to fly under here.
Yeah. And honestly, that's when I'm not doing my best work, when I'm not stimulated. I'm bored. I'm neurodivergent. I need some action.
Were there any positives to your corporate experiences?
I would say that it did expose me to, of course, just meeting so many amazing people that I still have relationships with now, that now we're kind of still working together and I'm on like the outside of things and can come in and say, hey, how can we collaborate? So there's a lot of positivity that came from just like meeting the people that I did. And it's the reason why I was led down the road that I'm down, right? I was kind of always having that difficulty just existing freely. I honestly was trauma hopping from job to job ever since I got laid off. So it was continual. I was always quitting one bad boss to another.
And then you don't know what a good boss or good leadership looks like, right? How did you learn how to be a better boss?
I'd be a little jealous of friends who had really good bosses. I would. I loved it for them. I'm so glad that you didn't have to experience that. But I would kind of see what those relationships are supposed to look like and say, that's how it should be. And that's what I want to be.
And I love how you pay that forward through all of your mentorship work. Can you share a little bit about that?
I've always had a love for mentorship. I started being a mentor at my college. I started being a mentor for the city of New York with a women's entrepreneurship program, Opportunities for Better Tomorrow. That's another program based in Brooklyn that gives opportunities to inner city youth to learn digital marketing skills. And we've had interns that have worked at our company for years. Every year, I really try to work with youth because I think that's where I could try to get in and really act on what I wish I had.
Did you feel, to an extent as well, being so ambitious that you were judged for it?
Very.
And that sucks, right?
Yes.
Wanting better, wanting more. It's almost like, who are you to want that for yourself?
Definitely. And having to pop out in those situations where I was on military bases and having that energy, having that main character energy, which is what I channel now and why I called my podcast Main Character Energy, is because it is just a way to shift the mindset for me. Yeah. It's something that I've always leaned on. Yeah. And so I think a lot of times it's interpreted as you think you're better or you're kind of extra. I would get that a lot. Yeah. I got that in high school a lot. Like, you know, I always like to dress up. Me and my best friend would always kind of like dress up to class and everyone would be like, who do you think you are? And we'd be like, we're just, you know, we're having fun and I'm going to do what I want. And I never really took offense to it. I just kind of always laughed about it. And I do know that a lot of times it's hard for people to do that for themselves. And so I always try to encourage it instead of feeding into that or instead of like taking offense. Yeah. It's like, no, girl, you can pop out too. Like, it's totally fine. You will feel so much better when you do it. And a lot of times you don't feel like you can. I know Rihanna has a great quote about that. Like, even when you're not feeling it, like, pop out anyways type of thing. I'm rephrasing. But that has been absolutely like a mechanism for me to just get through the day, get through a new space. And it works every time because then, you know, if you're putting that positivity out there, like other people respond and then it just makes for a good environment.
When you told me this story and when I dived into your podcast, Main Character Energy, it reminded me of that line from The Holiday. You know, where Arthur says to Kate Winslet's character, Iris, you're behaving like the best friend when you should be the leading lady.
Yes. Love that line. Amazing. Love that movie.
So I love the way that you are like presenting main character energies on your podcast to encourage people to be the main character in their life and not the supporting act. I want to dive into what you do now with your PR agency.
The reason why I wanted to start my agency is like I saw so much talent. I saw these great entrepreneurs. I saw amazing creatives that were emerging and people who wanted to start to create content, people who wanted to start to have a platform, start a business. And I knew that they had the talent. I feel like I definitely have an eye for seeing people's potential and I never try to hide it. I never bluff. I never cap. I'm always going to be like, oh my God, you are amazing. What are you doing? Like, we need to get you in front of a camera. Yeah. Like, do y'all see this? Like this. And that's just my personality, which I think sometimes if people aren't used to that, they might kind of be like, what's going on here? What's going on? Like, what's your agenda? But it's, they come to learn that it's really genuine. Yeah. And so I tried to think about how I can channel my capabilities into an agency that's all about just amplifying diverse voices. So what we're all about at Brand Curators is amplifying diverse voices, creators, brands, everybody who is mission-driven and mostly people who really have a lot of talent, a lot of potential, have a lot of knowledge, a lot of great subject matter experts who are amazing in their craft and in their field, but maybe they're not. It's not very second nature to be able to, you know, hop on a microphone, get in front of a camera, you know, of course, get press. And so we help them basically build, amplify, and monetize their brands.
What's something that your agency does that you think makes it stand out from the crowd or pop out, shall we say?
We're big on advocating right now for making sure that there's, you know, not pay disparities in the creator economy. That's something that happens in every industry, right? Like we're always faced with pay inequalities. That was something I faced all throughout corporate and didn't really have an advocate. And so we're trying to make sure with our creators that with like brand partnerships, things like that, we know what's going on. They're having good contracts. We have relationships with people who really have the same aligned vision. And it's been going great. I'm really loving it. We're definitely busy.
That's amazing. I want to ask you this question because I get this question a lot because my mission at Ginny Media is exactly the same. Why is it so important that we amplify diverse voices?
Representation matters. Representation is so important. I just think about even when we were first seeing Halle Bailey in The Little Mermaid on screens and how children were just amazed, like, she looks like me. I mean, stuff like that just brings me to tears because it's so important. I remember the first times I saw people who look like me in spaces and it just meant so much. So I think that representation piece, it can't be said enough that we just need people to be in these spaces to share their stories. That's why I'm always trying to get people on shows just like yours and be able to talk about these things because there's definitely people out there who can relate in some way, shape, or form, and you never know how that's going to affect them.
Tiffany Knighton, thank you so much for being here today. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. Your agency is called Brand Curators, and people can hear more of you on your podcast, Main Character Energy. Links are in the show notes.
Thanks for having me, Jenny.
And thank you for joining me today. Your time and attention is something we're so grateful for. This podcast is a production of Jenny Media. If you had fun, please subscribe and leave us a review. I'm Jenny Sarasvati, and next time you're staring blankly at your closet, take it from Tiffany. Pop out. Be the main character in your story, dress the part, and see what happens.